Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So if this Valentine's Day, on Friday, your date or outing or quiet evening at home with your partner starts to go something like this.
Magic flashed. Blazing sparks engulfed him in azure energy. The glowing outline of his big body grew even bigger, muscles bulging thicker, swelling along lengthening bones. Fingernails curved into claws, shredding the sheet he still gripped.
Whoa, now there's some Valentine's Day sparks, but perhaps better left on the page. That's right, on the page, the $1.4 billion pages of the romance novel genre industry. It's the hottest thing right now in publishing. Author Angela Knight, reading from her book Master of Darkness. She's actually big in the romance subgenre of paranormal erotic romance. You know, girl meets boy, boy turns into vampire, vampire fights with werewolf over girl, girl gets to decide whether to give in or say, It's all very dreamy.
He was actually dreaming about his heroine. In the dream, she was in danger. So that's the reason why he was turning into a werewolf, is that he wanted to protect her.
Angela Knight from Spartanburg, South Carolina, where she used to be a crime reporter. And all kinds of interesting details like that emerged when Jesse Barron, assistant editor at Harper's Magazine, attended the recent first annual romance novel convention in Las Vegas. Angela Knight was also there. Barron says this is a literary genre that makes no apologies to neither the Pulitzers or the Nobel Prizes.
The romance novel industry, first of all, it's really, really big. It's a $1.4 billion market. It's much bigger than literary fiction. It's bigger than anything. The types of novels that most people imagine, I think, when they think of romance are more old-fashioned novels, our Harlequin novels that, you know, your mom may have read. There used to be a subscription service where you'd get these novels. And that stuff still happens. That's the sort of really withholding heroes and the heroine who thaws him and maybe an arranged marriage leads to love. But what you're seeing a lot of now is much more explicitly erotic romance. 50 Shades would be the most famous example. But there's really a huge variety of stuff. And the romance has gotten much more sexual and much more comfortable with violence and with
handcuffs. You know, yeah, no, handcuffs. I noticed. Yeah. Exactly. But Angela, years ago when I was with ABC News, I interviewed Anne Rice. And at the time, she was like the whole genre in some sense of this paranormal, leaning romantic fiction. How much of an influence is someone like Anne Rice in your life and writing?
Oh, huge. I was 17 or 18, I suppose, when I read Interview with a Vampire, which, of course, was her first vampire novel.
Yep.
And she's the one that really kicked off the build toward paranormal. Because up until then, of course, vampires books were written by men. And men always, almost always, write vampires as monsters. And women tend to write them as heroic or romantic characters a lot more.
Are you writing for women, by and large?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that is my audience. There are not that many male romance readers, and it's not written for them. Men have generally a different perception of sexuality and romance than women do because their brains are wired a little differently. So when men read romances and they hit the sex scenes and they hit the romance part of it, they're like, what is this? This makes no sense. Which is why romance has a rotten reputation, is because men don't get it.
You know, it's interesting. Women use their imagination in thinking broadly about sexuality. When men do the same thing, they sort of, Jesse, it seems like they end up kind of in a Howard Stern place, just sort of imagining doing the forbidden as opposed to something more wild and literary.
I think that's true. Angela's absolutely right when she says that there's not a male audience for romance. It's about 92-93% of the readers of romance who are women. But I do think that for men, I think a lot of the fantasies and sexual imagination that men have, as you say, is different. But a lot of it is close to things that are uncomfortable to think about, like power and control and violence. And romance is a sort of safe way for a lot of women, I think, to consider these issues that really do affect them.
Jesse, is the romance industry and the convention that you attended out in Las Vegas, yeah. I mean, what is the feel? Is it kind of, you know, S&M slash NERF, you know, everything sort of harmless but explicit?
The general feel when I was out there, especially for people at the top, is that there's a real comfort with sexuality, with, as you say, with not just, you know, handcuffs and stuff, but even much more subtle, more intense sexual arrangements, like erotic contracts. And there is a comfort with that. I think it's one big thing that's changed since the bodice rippers were big in the 80s. In a bodice ripper, the logic of the sexual encounter is take me. And now there's a lot of novels like 50 Shades that are contract novels, where the logic is I give myself to you. And it's a real shift in the sexual agency of heroines and romance.
So let me get that straight. So it's take me is the old style. The new style is here's what we're going to do now, and these are the rules, and then we go wild.
Yeah.
Angela, you know, the worst review I ever read of a book was when the New York Review of Books, right, okay, can't get more stodgy than that, decided to review 50 Shades of Grey. They opened an AK-47 into that book. I mean, they truly, truly hated it in every way. With so much talk about the billion-dollar revenues and the sales and the audience and the numbers, is there a discussion of quality writing?
Absolutely. When I got published, it was very difficult to get published. You had to go through this whole years-long process of learning to write, learning the craft. Now you can go out, self-publish without even bothering to get it so much as spell checked, and in theory, at least start making money. And a lot of us who have really learned the craft and worked for years to get into this industry are really torqued about that, because it makes people who encounter these books think that we all write like that. And we don't like that at all.
Is that what you saw in Vegas, Jesse? A difference, a sort of a split between the kind of schlocky newbies and the old guard? This is real romance. This is real writing.
Yeah, there's some schlocky newbies. There's probably some schlocky old guard writers too.
There are.
But I think that part of the thing that goes on, I think, with something like the NYRB 50 Shades review is that the things that we would use in New York in a sort of literary publication like the NYRB to review a book, those are a totally different set of criteria than what romance readers are using. So good romance prose is quick and immediate and casual, and it has a real celerity in the plotting, and you just get carried along. And it's just not the types of things that we're looking for when we – and when I say we, I mean in our little bubble. I work at Harper's in New York, and there's this little literary thing – and it's a different set of criteria that's used. So I think that's definitely part of it. Now, one of the reasons that romance is great on ebooks is that once you master this this type of writing, it's easier to produce a lot of books. A literary writer might need 5 years, but a romance writer can maybe do a couple books a year. And if you sell them cheaply and sell a lot of units, you can really make some money.
Reporting on the romance industry for us, Jesse Barron, who wrote Bad Romance, One Genre and a Billion Happy Endings for Harper's, where he is an editor. And thanks to author Angela Knight. Donna thanks all the romance authors. They give me a rest from the world that I live in, she writes. They make me laugh and cry. When I was going through a very difficult time in my life a few years ago, I reread every one of them. They allowed me to survive, and I will be forever grateful to them. Donna wrote us on Facebook. You can call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway. And we'll leave you romantically with Robert Bonfilio as we mark the 100th birthday of harmonica virtuoso Larry Adler. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.